flew into action like a well-oiled machine. First came the bubbles, various defensive barriers to ward off both magical and physical attacks. A series of bolstering and healing effects enveloped the troops, the last of which was Step of Wind. This primal spell provided a sizable but very short-lived burst of speed to everyone around the caster. Having received their legs, the shield bearers broke the porcupine formation, charging forward in a blind rush that relied entirely on the magic users for cover. Thompson's nostrils suddenly filled with the familiar stench of war. The unnatural lightness in his step pushed him forward despite any exhaustion or mental strain he was enduring. He wasn't sure how far they were from the wall by now, but judging from the shards of ice, bolts of lightning, and plumes of flames flying at them, they were most definitely closer.
"Incoming topside!"
The private threw his gaze skyward, a house-sized meteor spell, the biggest one he'd ever seen, hurtled straight towards him and his unit. His mind went blank, but his thoroughly drilled body reacted accordingly. He crouched down to one knee, attempting to cover himself with his battered shield. In hindsight, not the best decision, but it was the only thing he could do in the spur of the moment. He wasn't fast enough to run out of that thing's blast radius before it fell, so his only option was to hunker down and hope for the best.
Mind hand!
Suddenly, the gigantic meteor was engulfed by a dense purple miasma and instantly changed course. It did a sharp upward turn and flew high into the air, towards a man draped in an ashen robe with a blue tabard covering his chest. His arms were stretched out and palms spread as if he would catch the incoming molten boulder like a kickball. He swung his hands sideways and the spell followed their motion. It did a splendid half-circle as he spun it around and flung it towards the enemy wall.
Dispel!
A wave of anti-magic crashed against the redirected meteor, and it evaporated into sparks and ash. Thompson and the rest of the foot soldiers were caught up in that effect as they lost all the strengthening effects of magic. The one who unleashed said D-spell was a female elven wizard flying under her own power. She wore a set of deep red robes under a lavender coat that had the Republic's black-on-gray flag proudly stamped on its back and chest. The pure white metallic bracers on her forearms were nearly identical to those of the flying human leering at her.
"Emeril!"
he shouted with a joyful tone.
"So good to see you haven't kicked the bucket yet!"
"Do I know you?"
shot back the high elf wizard while power gathered in her hands.
"Don't you worry! I'll make you remember, bitch!"
"I'm not in the business of paying attention to insects."
The High Elf clapped her hands as the human threw his own in front of him.
Thunder Lance!
Mana Void!
Emeril shot out a blinding bolt of lightning, but it was deftly caught by her opponent inside a small, invisible bubble. The bright purple-colored sparks lingered around for a few moments inside that confined space before they died away into nothingness. The hooded man swung his hand through the air in a sweeping motion. A gigantic impact threw Emeril to the side as if an invisible boulder crashed into her. However, whatever the attack was, it did little damage to her mana shield and merely pushed her around. Rather than waste time on this peculiar foe, Emeril flew off and found another Imperial unit to harass.
"Oi!"
shouted the hooded man.
"Come back here so I can properly sock you in the cunt!"
He was raring to chase after her before noticing something below.
"Huh? Whoa there!"
The Republic defenders atop the wall targeted him with arrows, spells, knives, axes, and anything else that could be thrown upwards. He waved his hands in a few grand circles, and all the projectiles aimed at him altered their trajectory to orbit around him. He pointed at the elves atop the walls as if instructing the various projectiles flying around him to return to their owners. This was precisely what they did, prompting his targets to evade or block them as best they could. Without a care for the results of his counterattack, the hooded man looked down at the regrouping Imperial squad that the High Elf had nearly annihilated. He gave a heavy sigh, as if to say, "What a pain," and decided he might as well lend them a hand. Literally. The man called Hook was, at that point in time, the highest level psionic on the continent. That wasn't saying much given the job's rarity, but his power was the real deal. Hook demonstrated it by raising his open palm above his head before swinging it downward in a grand, sweeping motion. A massive invisible force perfectly mimicked the gesture, albeit at a significantly lower elevation and on a much larger scale. It smashed into the wall from above, flattening dozens of defenders and instantly killing most of them. The fortification itself nearly buckled, but it remained remarkably intact as a testament to the dwarven architecture and elven ingenuity that went into its construction. Hook was a bit irked that he hadn't blown off the wall, but he was nevertheless pleased with the damage he caused. He flew off into the distance, eager to settle his grudge against that snarky bitch. Though she did not remember it, Imeril was responsible for Hook's capture and subsequent imprisonment decades ago. He would have been left to rot there if the Gilded Hand hadn't recognized his talents. He only had to play along with their schemes, and they'd give him both his freedom and the means through which he'd get payback on that pointy-eared bitch. Therefore, it was rather fortunate for Hook that the military changed their mind about allowing him to focus on eliminating the enemy VIP while planning the attack. Back on the ground, Private Thompson had no idea about any of that and was simply thankful for the aid. Thanks to the Allied VIP's interference, his unit was able to reach the 5-meter-tall wall with minimal further resistance.
"Shams and Toots, I want a ramp, now!"
barked the ever-vigilant sergeant.
"The rest of you, wake the fuck up! Don't just stand there gawking at the sky and provide cover! Let the big boys fight it out among themselves! We got our own job to do!"
The shamans and druids in the unit spread out and began a synchronous chant while the others quickly established a perimeter. The Republic forces tried to fill the gap in their defenses and to put a stop to what the humans were doing. However, the second wave of Imperial troops were already in range and doing everything in their power to keep the defenders pinned down. Thompson could do little but hover over a crouching, brown-haired druid while the man channeled as much of his magic as he could into the drenched soil.
"Mudslide!"
The wet ground churned and groaned as a large mound of mud rose up. It flowed between the caster group like a miniature tidal wave and crashed against the stone wall. A quick serving of fire magic, courtesy of an allied pyromancer, quickly dried up and solidified the dirt, creating a solid ramp that went up to a height of about 1.5 meters. It was far too short to allow anyone to climb over the wall, but it was the first step. The shamans and druids had to perform this spell 4 or 5 more times before the foot soldiers could scale the fortifications. They could have done it in one go if they had more people, but there were only 4 of the nature benders left in the entire unit. There was a sudden, loud crash several meters to the side of them. Thompson instinctively shifted his stance to shield his comrade from whatever caused the disturbance. He was surprised to see someone, clad head to toe in an elaborately decorated set of silver-colored armor, had slammed into the wall with enough force to make a visible dent in it. The man peeled himself off of the stone surface and fell down to the ground, landing in the mud on all 4s. He rose immediately to his feet in one smooth motion while grabbing hold of the large, 2-handed warhammer he'd dropped during his fall. He glanced down at the boot-shaped dent on his chest plate and then looked up at the winged, black-haired angel staring him down with a cold glare.
"All right, Jennifer," he mumbled under his breath. "Hard way it is, then."
Lictor demonstrated his level 100 paladin job by unfurling his own set of angelic wings before bolting upwards to meet his former teammate in single combat. He should have known talking to her wouldn't accomplish anything. Hilda had already made it abundantly clear the woman who now called herself Zone was not only the enemy, but also the one who killed Fayhorn. And yet the old paladin couldn't help himself and tried to reach out to her with words rather than force. It was a mistake he would not make a second time. The Imperial troops had no desire to stand in the way of the second enemy VIP to grace them with their presence, mostly because they wouldn't do much. Leaving that paladin to their own rancor was the right call. If nothing else, they had to be ready for the improvised ramp's completion in about 30 minutes. Their job was to charge up and over that wall before the enemy had a chance to undermine the foothold. Time was of the essence, especially since they didn't know whether that terrifying high elf wizard would come back and finish what she started.
Heads up, men! We have backup! Get that ramp up, even if it's the last thing you do! Yes! Yes!
Sergeant Smith's unit quickly cheered as their allies approached. Judging from the markings on the leader's armor and helmet, this infantry company was headed by a second lieutenant. They were clearly raring to make use of the nearly finished ramp. However, the honor of being the first over the wall belonged to Thompson and the rest of the Vanguard unit.
All right, we have our way in!
His commander bellowed.
Go, go, go! Break those twigs!
Dozens of Imperial soldiers began scaling the dried-up, hard-packed slope of dirt and climbed onto the top of the stone wall. The invading infantry split and flooded the narrow fortification as they tried to push the enemy off of it. The 2nd Legion's scouting corps rapidly abandoned the high ground and fell back from the fortifications. The invaders poured in from only one spot, so they focused their ranged attacks on that choke point while silver-plated heavy infantry attempted to box in the Imperials. Private Cohen Thompson managed to slip through after impaling an enemy archer with his spear and was currently fighting an elf knight. The two crossed spears and traded blows as the battle raged around, below, and above them. Thompson felt like he was gaining the upper hand when the elf suddenly received a blast of ice to the side of his face, causing him to stagger. The human seized that chance and lunged forward, piercing his opponent through the neck. The private received a notification signifying he'd reached level 39 of his warrior job, but he really couldn't afford to pay attention as he charged forward towards the next one. The humans and the elves fought each other fiercely, but the Empire was clearly taking control of the wall. It wasn't just Thompson's section. There were numerous breaches within the Republic's line, which rapidly fell into chaos. Seemingly routed, the defending troops in the area were given the order to fall back. Ranged and melee infantry alike retreated into the city with all due haste, their boots clattering loudly against the cobblestone pavement. The Imperial army tried to give chase, but their vanguard forces were far less nimble when leaping from the fortifications and stumbled or fell en masse. The defenders clearly anticipated that they wouldn't hold their position for long and were prepared to disengage. That was only natural, but Private Thompson noticed something odd as he regained his footing. There, at the edge of the open area between the walls and the nearby buildings, was a chest-high metal post poking out of the muddy soil. A weird iron box the size and shape of a brick was attached to it. A Republic soldier bearing a fancy helmet ran up to that odd container and did something. Thompson couldn't tell due to the distance and angle, but the elf had inserted a key and pushed a plunger.
Forward, men!
The private's training took over as his sergeant's voice hit him like a bolt of lightning.
Circle around and pincer the enemy still on the wall! Watch the buildings and give the twigs no quarter!
His momentary hesitation evaporated as he and his fellow soldiers moved forward and spread across the other side of the wall. He felt his left foot sink a tiny bit deeper into the mud than it should have. This was accompanied by a barely audible click, followed by the momentary sensation of something erupting from below. Your body is enveloped by flames. HP minus 342. Your body suffers internal damage from a shockwave. HP minus 184. Proficiency level increased. Toughness is now level 9. Endurance plus 4. You have been pierced by numerous sharp objects. HP minus 1,264. Proficiency level increased. Toughness is now level 10. Endurance plus 4. You have died. Part 2. Humans clashed against dwarves, each side giving a rallying cry of their own. Shield clanged against shield and spears tangled together as the Imperial troops and dwarven mercenaries fought in the middle of the street. Like two tidal waves of steel trapped in a small canal, they slammed into one another with all their might, neither willing to back down a single step. The housing on either side of the road was reduced to smoldering ruins that were still alight with magical fire despite the freezing rain pouring down from overhead. The only ground given or taken came down to footing as both sides gradually sunk into the muddy road.
Burst and bolt!
Came out a deep yell. The dwarven front line suddenly unleashed a unified shield bash martial art, blowing back the Imperial troops and breaking their defensive posture despite the height difference. What followed was a small volley of steel-tipped bolts released from the crossbowmen in the rear. They flew low over the objectively shorter soldiers' heads and poised to strike the Imperial troops dead on.
Grace!
The humans, not willing to suffer any more blasted projectiles, took cover behind their shields, be they metal or magic. The ones in the rear defended successfully, while those at the very front were still off balance and took a few hits. However, these projectiles didn't have a ranger's skills and attributes behind them. Even if crossbows were more powerful than bows, the damage the dwarves inflicted was far less fatal than that ungodly hail of arrows and explosions the Imperials suffered through at the start of the battle. The dwarven phalanx, not willing to let the enemy rebuild their formation, surged forward and once again clashed against them. At that time, a unit of 30 or so Imperial wizards flew in dangerously low over the wrecked houses. They unleashed a barrage of fire spells onto the dwarves, cooking several of them in their armor. The flyboys prepared for another salvo to finish them off, but were then struck by Imiril's triple chain lightning as she was passing by. Arcs of blue-tinged electricity bounced between them, and at least a third of the humans fell to the ground as charred corpses. Imiril did not stop to confirm the damage, nor did she fly back around to finish the job. The man codenamed Hook was still on her tail, and she couldn't afford to deal with him. The High Elf had been warned to expect a caster VIP from the Gilded Hand, so she knew he was formidable. However, this was her first time tangling with a psionic, and she wasn't prepared for his absurd amount of defense. Every spell the wizard flung at him was either nullified, redirected, dodged, or otherwise avoided. Imiril even attempted to get into melee range for a point-blank paralyzing shock, but the cocky human threw her back with a flick of his wrist when she got close. The High Elf felt confident she could get through his absurdly dense defenses eventually, but her allies didn't have that kind of time. The solution was simple. Rather than trying to beat down this one guy that wasn't even a ranker, Imiril instead focused on doing flybys on the Imperial lines while keeping her distance from the psionic. During their bouts, she had discovered the output of the human's force magic fell significantly the farther away his target was. The most he could do at maximum range was to disturb her flight path or interrupt her incantations, but the actual damage he inflicted was minimal. The man could also wield domination magic, but the clarity of mind and magical defenses of a level 100 wizard were more than enough to repel his psychic attacks. However, despite being incapable of anything more than hampering Imiril, Hook refused to give up. In his mind, "she cannot defeat me" was the same as "I can beat her," so he dogged her relentlessly. It wasn't as if he was stubbornly wasting his time, though. One of them had to run out of MP eventually, and he wasn't the one throwing lightning bolts around. Hook was, of course, aware of the monumental amount of MP a level 100 wizard had at their disposal, so he was in it for the long haul. And when that snooty bitch finally ran out of energy, she would be powerless to stop him from torturing her to his heart's content. Unfortunately for the psionic, his superiors did not share his enthusiasm.
"Operative Hook!"
a voice blared in his head. It came through the telepathic link Hook was maintaining between himself, his commanding officer, and the other VIPs.
"What is it?"
he responded without trying to hide his irritation.
"We have sightings of the Tempest of Rage in the eastern side of town. Disengage from your current target and go put a stop to that monster's rampage. She's mowing down our men like they're weeds."
Hook really didn't like that order. He wanted to make that haughty bitch pay for costing him his left arm and leg during their confrontation years ago. Just thinking about that day made his magically restored limbs ache with the phantom pain of having them burnt off his body. He wanted to catch that cunt and put her through much the same, mostly for his own satisfaction.
"Weeds are notoriously tough survivors, Major,"
he replied defiantly.
"I'm sure they'll be fine with that."
"Do it now, you cocky piece of shit!"
The psionic disliked that stuck-up officer's tone, too. Did he realize the man he talked down to could turn him into a drooling vegetable even from this distance? No, he definitely knew, yet still did not hesitate to boss the gilded hand around. Hook somewhat respected that the major had balls befitting his rank, and rank was pretty much everything in the Imperial Army. The psionic was in danger of getting court-martialed if he further disobeyed orders, which would cost him his cushy job and fat paycheck. Last but not least, he'd piss off Edward. And that was a thought far more unpleasant than letting that twiggy bitch off the hook, as it were.
Understood, sir,
he replied spitefully.
Disengaging and acquiring new target.
Hook made an abrupt 90-degree turn as he broke off his aerial pursuit and headed towards the location given by his handler. Flying through the open air naturally made him a target, as arrows and spells launched from the ground flew at him as he passed by. Of course, such disorganized and spontaneous anti-air measures had no hope of hitting him at his speed. Even if they did, they'd just bounce off of his force field. In fact, given how even Imiril had given up on attacking him, his invisible barrier saw far more work as an umbrella than a form of defense. It wasn't all bad, though, since Hook hated getting his threads wet. As for the ground battle, it had more or less descended into chaos ever since the wall was breached 3 hours ago. The elves had the advantage in numbers and knowledge of the terrain, but the Imperial War Machine was still going strong. The humans' superior equipment and tactics regarding urban combat allowed them to push into the city despite repeated ambushes. Explosive traps were a huge problem, too. Only elves would be crazy enough to rig their own positions to blow up, Hook thought. Surely they had some kind of trick to make sure they didn't accidentally blast themselves to bits, but it was currently unknown to the Empire. Ultimately, all the petty shenanigans did was slow down the invaders without fully blunting their advance. The unstoppable one dwarf army called Hilda was the only exception. Her position wasn't difficult to locate since all Hook had to do was follow the screaming and yelling that was clearly audible over the rest of the battle. Once he closed in, the psionic rapidly descended towards a small alley where a gruesome massacre had unfolded. Enough body parts to glue together 30 Imperial soldiers were strewn all over the place. The rain did its best to wash the blood from the walls, creating huge puddles of red water in the process. Standing right in the middle of that filth was a lone dwarven berserker. Her dented and scratched up armor was so thick with blood and viscera that she looked as if she'd crashed through 15 butcher shops in a row. Which might have been the case, given the dwarf-shaped holes in the surrounding buildings. Hilda's grip was tightened around the shaft of an impractically massive axe, its saw-toothed edge glowing ominously with a crimson light. The dwarf appeared to be leaning on her weapon, trying to catch her breath. Additionally, it seemed as though some of the blood stuck to her was her own. It was difficult to tell her exact condition since that helmet completely encased her head and face. However, given how she had yet to notice her visitor, Hook guessed she wasn't doing too great. Feeling confident, he decided to give her a little greeting.
Ground coffin!
The ground Hilda stood on suddenly split apart. Two slabs of road rose up and smashed into her from either side as if someone had dramatically closed a book made of cobblestone. If an ordinary soldier had been hit by that, then nearly every bone in their body would have broken in an instant.
Bloody cotton cock maggots!
But this being Hilda, she broke out of the coffin while cursing her lungs out, seemingly none the worse for wear.
All right,
she shouted.
What suicidal twat face just signed their death warrant, eh?
Her furious, searching gaze instantly locked onto the psionic floating some 15 meters above her.
Was it you up there, you slimy poofta?
Without even waiting for the answer, the fuming berserker grabbed a loose cobblestone from the ground and threw it straight at the psionic's head. It smashed against his force field with enough energy to turn the piece of pavement into a cloud of dust upon impact. However, it didn't even make Hook flinch, which only upped the intensity on Hilda's unyielding fury even further.
Come here, you pajama-wearing pansy,
she taunted.
What? Think just cause you're up in the air you're better than me? I'll fucking wreck you, mate.
Quiet.
Mind crush!
After finally obtaining a suitable target for his prided domination magic, Hook wasted little time putting it to good use. Hilda dropped her oversized axe and fell to the ground, writhing as the human's mental assault attempted to completely shatter her psyche. The strain it put on her was completely unexpected and unlike anything else she'd experienced. It was as if someone was trying to rip her brain out of her skull through her ears and nose, pulling on it in every direction. The dwarf's extremely volatile nature as a berserker made her a force to be reckoned with on the battlefield, but that was only at a physical level. The job required a volatile state of mind, which actively worked against her when it came to mental attacks. Indeed, for all her martial might and force of will, she was ultimately nothing more than a loud-mouthed toddler before a hook. The sadistic psionic fully anticipated this. His earlier irritation at being ordered to give up on Imiril disappeared as he reveled in the dwarf's roars of pain and impotent rage. He really enjoyed easy wins like this. Honestly, was this supposed to be a level 100 adventurer? Was she seriously that unprepared for such an obvious counter? In the next instant, he realized that no, she wasn't. He broke off his assault on her mind and dodged rapidly to the side as a stalker demon tore through the air he occupied a moment ago. Her primary claws missed her mark, but her back-mounted scythe still managed to clip the psionic's force field. Normally, they would have bounced off, but their anti-magical properties allowed them to rip through and pop the invisible bubble. Hook had been lured into a trap specifically meant for him. Once the Republic learned of his powerful domination magic, they concluded that it would be only a matter of time before he was sent to deal with Hilda. So, the berserker was told to make herself a very obvious and loud target, to which she readily agreed. She was, after all, particularly good at that sort of thing. The dwarf served as bait to lure in and distract the psionic, giving the Sandman's loyal minion a chance to strike. The vigilante had expressed his unwillingness to personally confront Hook, but promised to intervene should the opportunity present itself. In other words, Boxy really didn't want to face a powerful enemy unless it was certain of its victory. So far, both parties had done their part perfectly. Hilda was a good little loudmouth and forced the Empire to send Hook. When the target took the bait, Drea launched herself at him using an improvised man-sized slingshot made from springy spider thread. She had limited experience facing psionics, so she relied on her usual anti-caster strategy, namely, to gut the son of a bitch before he knew she was even there. However, this particular human proved much tougher prey. He detected Drea's presence through a skill called Psychic Screen. It allowed him to sense the presence of any and all sentient beings within its range, especially those harboring malicious intent towards him. It wasn't as foolproof as a certain shapeshifter's MLG, but it was still a powerful anti-assassination tool. He knew a demon was skulking about, but she had come flying at him with great speed and at an awkward angle that nearly caught him anyway. Nearly being the operative word. Having failed in her initial ambush, Drea landed on one of the tiled rooftops and immediately turned around to stare at her target face to face. This sort of direct confrontation with her lunch wasn't to her liking, which she displayed by hissing loudly while clacking her mandibles and claws together in irritation. Hook immediately swung his favorite mind hand down on top of her, but the nimble demon dodged it by bolting off to the side. She immediately countered by shooting a stream of white webbing from her left claw hand, which latched onto Hook's right foot.
Shit! My force field!
Having his fun suddenly interrupted like that made the psionic lash out at the annoying arachnid instead of rebuilding his defenses. The light-bodied demon began rapidly climbing up the web line, clearly intent on ripping him apart. Hook would obviously have none of that and used a stunning mind blast spell on her. Even if demons were highly resistant to mental attacks, they weren't completely immune to them. Indeed, the mental jolt he unleashed was powerful enough to stop the stalker's upward advance for a second, which was all he needed. In the next instant, his mind hand wrapped tightly around the demon, breaking and mangling her nimble limbs in its mystical grip. Rather than killing her on the spot, Hook made a throwing motion with his entire upper body, catapulting Drea into the distance. It was a one-way express ticket to the middle of the rainy woodlands. Just then, he felt a tug at his leg. Looking down in a panic, he realized the thick thread that Spider-Girl hit him with was still there, and Hilda had caught the dangling rope with both hands. One could practically hear the mad, evil grin spreading underneath her helmet.
Get over here!
The dwarven berserker pulled on the thread with all her might. The enormous weight of her armor kept her feet firmly planted on the ground while the ridiculous strength in her arms overpowered whatever magic kept her opponent afloat. Hook slammed face first into the cobblestone road some 6 meters away from the dwarf, sending mud, water, and rocks flying everywhere. The human had deployed a force field in an attempt to cushion his dwarf-assisted fall. His hastily constructed barrier couldn't absorb the force of the impact and shattered. The psionic's body smashed against the cobblestone ground hard enough to leave him reeling and dazed. Rather than pick up her axe and try to close the distance between them, Hilda chose to not give her opponent a chance to regain his concentration.
Come on, boyo. Let's meet the neighbors.
She tightened her grip on the rope-like thread and twisted her entire body around as she swung Hook sideways, sending him crashing through a nearby wall. He didn't manage to bring his defenses up at all this time around, meaning the man took the full brunt of that impact. Hilda readjusted her grip on the sticky thread and spun in the opposite direction to fling him into the house on the opposite side of the alley. It wasn't until the third time that Hook was introduced to the neighborhood that the silken rope snapped from the strain. Finally freed from his role as Hilda's ragdoll, the psionic was allowed the precious few seconds he needed to regain his wits and reassess his situation. His arm was broken. He was bleeding externally, possibly internally, and the contents of his smashed-up potion vials were leaking from his gear. To make matters worse, his psychic screen detected a number of smaller presences coming towards him, accompanied by a particularly gruesome one unlike anything else he'd felt before. He decided this was enough paycheck earning for the moment and chanted a flight spell through gritted teeth. He bolted straight up into the air and soared back toward Imperial lines to recuperate while he had the chance. Hilda bent over, collapsed to her knees, and panted heavily with only the raindrops on her helmet and the puddles of Imperial blood under her feet for company. She had been fighting literally non-stop ever since the humans cleared the wall, so her exhaustion wasn't merely an act to draw that bastard in. He was much more powerful than Imiril had let on, so she felt she would have definitely bit the big one if the Sandman's bodyguard hadn't left her a lifeline like that.
I guess that's two I owe that creepy bastard.
The dwarf couldn't help but chuckle between gasping breaths. First, he bailed her out at Fort Yemen, and now this. The Sandman was no Milo Fayhorn, but she'd end up just as indebted to him if things kept turning out this way.
Miss Hilda!
The dwarf shifted her gaze to the side, and her body reflexively tensed up at that strangely squeaky voice. The intensifying rain coupled with her blurry vision made it hard to make out shapes and colors, so she wasn't sure if the 2 dozen or so blobs approaching her were allies or enemies. At least not until a random lightning strike illuminated the group, revealing the one in the lead had a full head of crimson hair topped by 2 triangular ears. As they got closer, she also realized that the growing white spot in her vision wasn't the infamous light at the end of the tunnel, but a mithril golem.
Oh, if it isn't the Mary Popper.
She relaxed her guard.
I forgot you and your trophy wife were around for a second there.
Miss Hilda, this is not the time for that,
complained Kira as she and the rest of her squad gathered around her.
Are you all right? Where's the enemy?
Ran off with his tail between his legs.
Got me good.
But a tall creep's pet helped me give as good as I got. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really need to lie down for a moment.
Clunk. That bare-bones explanation was all the dwarf could manage before she fell backwards onto the wet ground, her ruptured mind no longer able to cling to consciousness. Seeing that unstoppable force called Hilda suddenly keel over like that momentarily stunned the Republic troops, Kira included. Unlike the soldiers under her command, however, the redhead's reaction wasn't due to shock, surprise, or disbelief, but a sign of the monster underneath weighing its options. It would be frightfully easy to finish off the berserker in her current state and dispose of the witnesses. The rain would provide plenty of cover, and it could blame all their deaths on the failed ambush. Not to mention that Fizzy would be there to corroborate her story, so there would be no danger to Boxy's facade. The upsides to doing so would basically boil down to gaining some levels for the kill. Probably not too many, seeing as someone else had already done most of the work. Other than that, it had a chance to absorb an absurd amount of attributes or some high-tier skill from her corpse. That was all quite tempting, but it could get plenty of those things if it just feasted on the nearby army. What it couldn't get from the humans was the dwarf's connections. Hilda knew people. Lots of people. And by being her friend and student, Kira could gain access to those people, not to mention the Berserker herself could be a useful ally. Last but not least, her death would mean the Sandman's mission had failed, which would reflect poorly on his reputation and lead to fewer, less profitable contracts. Having concluded that Hilda had more value alive than dead, Kira suddenly raised her voice.
"Well, don't just stand there,"
she shouted at the others.
"I want Fizzy, Jax, and Sparrow to heal her wounds. We're still in a war zone, so we'll need some cover. You four, check that house and secure it. I also want eyes on the rooftops. That means you, Mikey. Saria, too. Let me know the instant you spot enemy movement. Once the VIP is treated, we'll move her inside and consult with command. Until then, Syme, I want you to check the human corpses for an officer and see if they have anything of value on them. And I mean documents or maps. If I see you pulling out any more golden fillings, I'll ram them down your throat!"
Shouts of "yes, ma'am," and "right away, ma'am," rose up from the gathered soldiers and conscripts as they scrambled to complete their assigned orders. Of course, a good number of them held initial reservations about a young girl ordering them around. Even if they knew better than to judge a book by its cover, it was still hard to accept a happy-go-lucky kid like that as their commanding officer. Indeed, many of them believed her to be little more than a mascot, despite Fizzy's assurances to the contrary. It also didn't help that the previous commander was killed in action at the start of the battle, leaving Kira in charge as the most senior in rank. However, even though a third of the unit was already dead, not a single man or woman who remained had any doubts as to the young girl's ability to lead. Kira's sound judgment and thorough understanding of her enemy had seen them through 7 separate victories against Imperial units in this battle so far. She wasn't a master strategist, but she wielded the troops at her disposal as if they were extensions of her own body. She knew the right moment to press the attack, didn't hesitate to pull her men back to regroup when the need arose, and avoided engaging the enemy if there was no chance of victory. That said, compared to the bigger picture, her accomplishments were so negligible and small-scale they did nothing to change the course of the battle for New Whitehall. Nothing would have changed even if she had gotten her unit wiped out almost immediately. However, this wasn't how the people doing the actual fighting felt. To Canis, Kira Morgana's concise orders, caring personality, and unrelenting covering fire had elevated the young girl from a perceived burden to a shining beacon. In the eyes of her troops, she was a guiding light that would see them safely through the unrelenting storm called war. Thus, not a single one of them batted an eye when she told them their unit would be taking part in an operation to entrap and kill an enemy VIP. Their morale raised even further when they were told the famous Hilda and the infamous Sandman would be taking point. Adding Fizzy's guardian angel-like presence and Kira's infallible command made them exclaim that the goddess of victory had blessed them with her presence. The Decanus then promptly called them idiots, reminded them that such a deity didn't exist, and drove home the point that pointless bravado would only get them killed. Their role was strictly to provide support and backup in case Imperial foot soldiers showed up. If the enemy was powerful enough to overcome both Hilda and Mr. S., then there would be no way the rest of them stood a chance. Watching the brief yet intense confrontation from afar proved that Kira's judgment was, as usual, right on the money. The Republic troops found themselves taking refuge in a leaky, half-destroyed house as the battle raged on in other parts of the city. They were huddled around the unconscious but otherwise healthy Hilda while Kira reported their status to Silas Underwood via comm crystal.
"I see," he said after hearing all the necessary details. "It's unfortunate he escaped, but we now have a better grasp of his abilities. For now, transport the VIP back to camp. Imperial forces seem to be falling back for the moment, so your way should be..."
The blue-tinged image of the elven intelligence officer suddenly went silent and turned his head to the side.
What?
He yelled in shock to someone out of sight.
Since when? Shit, they got us.
He turned his attention to the cat girl on the line.
Belay that, Decanus. Your new orders are to take shelter immediately. Go underground, fortify your position, and protect the VIP until you receive further...
The signal suddenly grew distorted before abruptly cutting off.
You heard the man!
Kira shouted before any potential unease could set in.
Something big's coming and we gotta be ready. Get the VIP into the basement and shore it up with magic. I want-
Decanus, ma'am!
One of the unit's scouts, a human rogue, suddenly poked his head through a hole in the ceiling and interrupted the redhead's usual barrage of orders.
What is it, Mikey? Enemy movement?
No, ma'am!
His voice was panicked.
I spotted something strange, but have no idea what it is. I think you should take a look at it.
I have a bad feeling about this. All right, I'm going topside to check it out. Syme, you're in charge until I get back.
The cat girl turned around and tossed the comm crystal to one of the elven soldiers.
On it, ma'am,
he saluted, then directed the others to the basement. Kira nimbly climbed into the hole that the scout was poking out of, and the two of them soon arrived atop the half-destroyed, slanted roof. They carefully crawled over the slippery red tiles and peeked their heads over the roof's apex.
Up there, ma'am, in the northeast.
Following the rogue's finger, Kira easily located the anomaly he mentioned. The sky was... blue? The depressingly gray layer of clouds that had been dumping freezing rain over New Whitehall for a few days straight had a blank spot. It was as if someone had pierced a hole in the heavens themselves, allowing the afternoon sun to shine through and cast a breathtaking rainbow over the battlefield. This odd sight was further punctuated by the strange movements of the clouds. Rather than closing in to fill the bizarre gap as one might expect, they gave off the impression that they were running away from it of their own volition. Kira stood fully to get a better view. Her gaze wasn't locked on the bizarre weather pattern overhead, but rather on the ground directly underneath it. It was a spot off in the distance, well within the city and far behind Republic lines. In that area, barely visible through the rain and smoke, she spotted a thick, unnatural, swirling red mist. Mikey followed her eyeline and noticed the anomalous cloud as well.
Do you know what that is, ma'am?
He asked expectantly.
No,
lied Kira.
But I don't like it one bit. Where's Saria?
She went off to do some force recon, ma'am.
In other words, she had abandoned her post to hunt Imperial stragglers.
Find her and bring her to the basement. Both of you are to take cover and follow Syme's lead. I'm going to keep watch for a while longer.
But I can't just leave you here. If it's about scouting—
Just fucking go, Mikey,
she insisted.
My eyes are better than both yours and Saria's, and you know it.
Understood, ma'am.
The human hesitated for a second before saluting her and sliding down the tiled roof. Kira's attention returned to the swirling red mist over a kilometer away. For once, it was something Boxy was familiar with. That was precisely why the monster doubted whether cowering in a basement would be enough to survive the inbound threat. Its devious mind had already come up with an alternative solution, but the shapeshifter really didn't want to go through with it. It hesitated mostly because it was a stupid idea. It was something it had thought about several times since crossing the border, but had never even considered putting into practice. Indeed, it was so abysmally terrible and prone to backfiring that attempting it would put its survival at serious risk. It didn't need to do it either, as all it had to do to live through this was turn tail and desert the battle with all due haste. Consequences to its facade be damned. And yet, it still wanted to do it. This was an opportunity to let Kira survive the inbound threat, allow the Sandman to secure his next Republic-funded paycheck, and put those plagiaristic Imperials in their place, all at the same time. Whether it would actually work out that way was largely down to chance. And chances existed to be taken. 1-800-7355-9687-7685.
Hello, you have-
Carl, it's Boxy. Listen, I have an emergency.
Whoa, okay. Hit me.
The doppelganger took a deep breath and steeled itself for what was about to transpire. It would have to work quickly and with precision, and after a certain point, things would be beyond its control entirely. However, it all started with a small, seemingly innocuous statement.
I need to make an appointment.
Part 3. The earth shook. The winds howled. The air itself caught fire, and the clouds ran away as the sacrifice rose up into the air, her body radiating an intense red light. The human warlock that just finished performing the offering ritual dashed away from the scene as fast as his legs would carry him. He broke through the swirling red mist and collapsed on his knees before Zone. The stone-faced monk had been the one to carry him so far behind enemy lines and was also responsible for getting him back.
"It's done!" he shouted. "Get us out of here before that thing arrives!"
The female monk swept the man up in an underarm carry, unfurled her ethereal wings, and departed the scene with all due haste. They had mere seconds before the guest of honor arrived, after which his legendary temper would do all the work for them. The summoner's MP would have only been enough to fuel the demon's rampage for 10 minutes at most, but to those elves on the ground, they would be the longest 10 minutes of their lives. With a fiery explosion strong enough to shake the entire city, the overlord of the Flaming Legion entered the battlefield.
"Tremble, mortals, and despair, for Nagnamor has come!"
Standing well over 7 meters tall, with smoldering wings the size of fields, a half-molten demonic skull for a head, and a glaive large enough to cleave houses in half, the demon formally announced his arrival. After making sure he had made a sufficiently dramatic entrance, the overlord took in his surroundings. He sensed the presence of his summoner, who retreated through the air with truly commendable speed. Normally, Nagnamora's first order of business was making sure the trifling insect that dared to call him forth from the beyond was sufficiently squished, but today was an exception. He directed his infernal gaze away from that cowardly gnat and scanned over the city's rooftops. All around him he felt the presence of Republic soldiers, thousands of mortal souls whose wholesale slaughter would bring him great pleasure. Even more fodder was situated further south, concentrated around the city's edge. Those were the Imperial troops that intended to dump Nagnamor on their enemies and indirectly make use of his power while avoiding his wrath. They clearly saw him as nothing but a mindless brute and woefully underestimated his intelligence if they thought he wouldn't catch on to their little scheme. It was an insult that any fiend worth their horns would return by squashing them flat for their insolence. None of this was of immediate concern to the overlord. Right there, right then, well within his reach was the one who had made a fool of him not so long ago. The most infamous and feared of all demon kind had been forced to endure the truly unprecedented humiliation of allowing a mortal to boss him around. Perhaps the worst part of that affair was that the one responsible had been an indescribably insignificant little box that managed to stumble onto an idiotic loophole by pure accident. Having been bested through blind luck rather than through wit or might was what made the Archfiend so unbelievably salty over the whole ordeal. Which was why, rather than stomp on mortals to his heart's content, Nagnamor would use his full insurmountable might to obliterate that arrogant creature. He would incinerate it so thoroughly that even its wretched little soul would be reduced to ash. Before he could do any of that, however, the overlord first had to find his mark. His scorching gaze flitted between New Whitehall's scarce landmarks. He cross-referenced them with what he saw through the Boxy Show podcast in the Beyond, just before he was summoned. It only took a few seconds to determine the shapeshifter's approximate location.
"Morning, Warg!"
he bellowed with a voice like rolling thunder.
"I'm coming for you, you insufferable little bug!"
Nagnamor broke out in a sprint.
Like a mad bull, he crashed through or trampled over the single and double-story buildings in his way. His bottomless hate and thirst for revenge manifested themselves as raging crimson flames that enveloped his entire body as he made a beeline towards Kira's last known position. The unwitting Republic soldiers, conscripts, and reserves caught in his wake did their best to get out of the way, but it was a futile effort. His sheer speed, combined with the ungodly intensity of his flames, reduced everything to cinders in the blink of an eye, leaving nothing but a smoldering black trench in his wake. Though seemingly futile, the Republic still made an attempt to stop, or at the very least slow down the sentient mass of hatred. Nagnamor was headed for the central plaza, and his passage would surely decapitate the defenders' command post and leave their troops in disarray. With seconds to spare, the Second Legion launched every spell and arrow they could at the Overlord. Their attempts were about as effective as the raindrops that evaporated before they could even touch the Archfiend's blazing skull. Just as Nagnamor was about to enter the critical plaza, a streak of golden light zoomed straight at his face. The Overlord felt a dull impact against the side of his skull, one powerful enough to knock him off balance and send him careening into a nearby empty grain silo. The unexpected shift in momentum caused him to trip over his own cloven feet. He fell over like an avalanche of fire and steel, wiping out most of a residential block. The demon immediately rose to his feet while swinging his glaive in a wide, circular motion. The massive weapon released streaks of semi-solid fire that mowed down and burned away everything in their path. That one swing instantly demolished everything within 30 meters of him.
Who dares stand in the way of Nagnamor's warpath?
It is I, demon!
Floating several meters in the air was a man clad head to toe in radiant, golden armor. A pair of majestic, hawk-like wings sprouted from his back, while a halo positively brimming with holy energy surrounded his head. A massive warhammer with an intricately covered shaft and head was in his hands. The weapon shone with a blinding light that was somehow both beautiful and terrible.
My name is Alduin Lictor, Grand Champion of the Blessed of Nairi, and Guardian to the People of the Republic.
The elven paladin had ignored his orders to lay low and safeguard his own skin in order to confront and contain the rampaging overlord.
Die, insect!
Caring little for trifling mortal titles, Nagnamor swung his massive weapon at Lictor with speed and strength that no mere mortal could hope to contest. And yet, the much smaller paladin caught the demon's glaive with his own holy warhammer, stopping it dead in its tracks.
I say thee nay!
The demon's flaming eye sockets burned with an even brighter flame as he rebuilt his stance and reassessed his puny opponent. The holy energy oozing out of the mortal's equipment gave the archdemon pause. He surmised that armor seemed to be what was giving this mortal his unreasonable strength, and he correctly guessed that this power was a terribly temporary arrangement. Indeed, Lictor's ability to stand toe-to-toe with a demonic overlord stemmed from his ultimate skill, Divine Regalia. It imbued his weapons and armor with a surge of holy energy, raising their performance to the point where they put the ephemeral phantasmal-grade items to shame, perhaps even venturing into the legendary Divine tier. The blessed arms and armor boosted the paladin's combat abilities several times over, but it came at a rather steep price. Divine Regalia steadily consumed the paladin's accumulated faith while active, and the stress it placed upon his equipment would cause it to irreparably break once the transformation subsided. Embarrassingly enough, that also included his underwear.
Impressive!
Yelled the Overlord with a hint of delight in his voice.
I did not expect a worthy challenger to show up, but my business is not with you, holy beetle. Stand aside so that I might fulfill my purpose.
I will not,
declared Lictor, his voice booming loud enough to rival the demon's.
You cannot be allowed to endanger the lives of my comrades any further. Whatever your dark purpose, you shall not pass!
The High Elf braced himself as the demon laughed menacingly. In truth, Nagnamor rather enjoyed this exchange. It had been far too long since he had a challenger that could so much as scratch him. Usually, only something along the lines of an adult dragon gave him pause, so this was a rare treat indeed. His infernal blood boiled with excitement at the prospect of overwhelming this opponent. Last but not least, the Overlord was a fan of the classics. A brave holy warrior standing up to a much greater evil in an hour of dire need was the sort of cliché story that the Archfiend loved to partake in. After all, he was more or less solely responsible for creating many old legends with similar developments. If the circumstances were different, Nagnamor would have definitely stayed around and played with the paladin. However, the Overlord was short on time. That insufferable little box was surely getting farther and farther away with every second he delayed. Revenge was more important than recreation, so the demon needed to get this self-righteous elf out of his way. He knew just the way to do it, too.
Then let us see how much you treasure your comrades, fool!
The demon raised his glaive above his head while staring intently at the nearby city hall building, causing Lictor to momentarily panic. That large circular slash the demon made earlier revealed that the range of his attacks extended far beyond the reach of his weapon, so there was no doubt in the paladin's mind as to what would happen next. The angelic elf's body moved with the same blinding speed as before, placing him firmly between the demon and the Republic's command center. It seemed he made it in time to block the incoming attack. But there was one problem. It was a feint. Instead of striking at the building full of mortals, Nagnamor's weapon stabbed the ground beneath the Overlord's feet. It dug deep into the dirt and rock as if it were a shovel, causing spurts of magma to erupt around it. He gripped the long handle with both hands, channeling his power into the ground while the paladin was flying pointlessly around.
Rise!
Groaned the demon. Realizing he'd been tricked, Lictor charged towards the Overlord with a yell.
Rise!
The elf swung his hammer at the demon's face, but was far too late to stop him.
Legion, rise!
The crimson flames protecting Nagnamor's body suddenly rose in intensity. The fierce rush of hot air blew Lictor back, causing him to temporarily lose control of his flight. The earth shook fiercely, causing buildings to fall over seemingly at random as hundreds of cracks bubbling over with lava appeared all over the surrounding area. The paladin watched in abject horror as countless humanoid figures made out of molten rock and stone emerged from the flaming abyss. Although they looked like molten golems, these monsters were actually a species of especially malevolent demons called the Ifrit, and each and every one of them was Nagnamor's subordinate. And, true to their demonic heritage, they began indiscriminately attacking everything in sight. This was the Flaming Legion, whose only purpose was to extinguish life.
You... what have you done?
Shouted Lictor at Nagnamor. He charged at the Overlord dead on, only to be swatted out of the air by the demon's backhanded swing. He flew through a building and crashed into the ground with a cloud of dust. Nagnamor pulled his weapon out of the ground and gave the pitiable mortal one last glance. He was sure those divine armaments kept the gnat out of death's door, but his subordinates would make sure he was far too busy fending them off to get in his way again. It was a bit regrettable he wouldn't be able to enjoy a proper throwdown with someone worthy. Nagnamor chose to blame this missed opportunity on Boxy, adding yet more fuel to his scorching fury. When he turned his gaze southward once again, the Overlord saw something clearly out of place. Much like his own arrival spot, the clouds in the sky seemed to have been punctured clean through, and a thick, light blue mist gathered directly underneath it.
No.
He grit his teeth.
No, 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 no!
With a tiny flash of light and almost no sound, a white mass of something shot up into the air. Although from a distance it looked like a geyser throwing up an incalculable volume of snow, Nagnamore knew it was something infinitely more dreadful than powdered, frozen water. It was a deluge of millions upon millions of pure white, ball-like spiders, each no larger than a thumb and sporting a set of 8 long, hair-thin legs. They rose high up into the air and caught an unnatural gust of icy cold wind that sent them flying straight at Nagnamore's location. They loomed overhead like a heavy mist before converging into a single spot. Their slender arachnid limbs and impossibly thin spider silk wove and intermingled together as they rapidly combined into a singular form. The result looked like someone had glued a teenage girl's upper body onto the back of a large spider's head, then supersized the gruesome yet alluring combination until it was large enough to be at Nagnamore's eye level. Both the arachnid carapace and human-like skin were ivory white and completely smooth, while the girl's long, silky hair hung to her waist and draped over her otherwise naked body like a loose shawl. Each half had its own set of glowing red eyes, giving the amalgamation a total of 10. After forming in a matter of seconds, the gigantic construct landed squarely in front of Nagnamore. It touched down so softly and silently one wouldn't be blamed for thinking it was an illusion born from a cloud. The girl's doll-like face cracked a wide smile.
Yo, Nagnamoron, how you doing?
A youthful, playful voice rang out around her, even though her alabaster lips didn't move.
Leosolra!
Nagnamore bellowed.
Why are you out here?
Because I was, called out. That's just, how the rituals work, fam.
Did that insufferable gnat bring you out here?
Who the what now? I have no idea who you're, talking about. The one that rang me up was, totally polite and sweet and junk.
Nagnamore straightened his posture and pointed his weapon threateningly at his fellow overlord's head.
Are you here to get in my way?
No way, fam. I just got invited to come out and play around for a bit. Know what I'm saying?
The skin on the girl's arms began to crawl and shift as the arachnid demon's endless swarm rapidly reconstructed her left hand into a long, crystalline blade.
I just like to play rough.
With those indignant words, Leosolra's avatar swung at Nagnamore's neck. The archfiend easily deflected the blows with his weapon and immediately counterattacked, cutting the white spider girl thing's arm clean off. Countless white strands shot out from both ends of the severed arm as it instantly reattached itself while the other made a stabbing motion with an icy dagger that appeared out of thin air. It did little but smash against Nagnamore's armor and momentarily quell the raging inferno surrounding him.
Fuck off, you old hag!
Make me loser!
Her indignant reply was accompanied by a barrage of magical ice spikes that were countered by a wave of flame from the Archfiend.
At least fight for yourself instead of using a puppet!
He demanded. He then swung his glaive and cut said puppet's head clean off, but the face merely stuck its tongue out mockingly at him before the neck reattached itself to the shoulders. The overlord of the endless swarm hadn't shown her true self for millennia, and she wasn't about to change that. Just because she was the oldest and arguably the most cooperative of the 4 demonic overlords didn't necessarily mean she had to make a personal appearance. Nor did it mean she had to be all big and flashy like a certain hot-headed loudmouth. In fact, Leosolra's actual appearance and form didn't differ in the slightest from the countless remote-control clones that currently made up her avatar. It was truly mind-boggling how a frame that small could handle so much power. Her real body was currently tucked away in the darkest, dankest little corner of the city where nobody would ever find it. As for why Leosora was so readily standing up to Nagnamor, it was precisely because Boxy had asked nicely. That was really all there was to it. She didn't have a habit of instantly eliminating her summoners since, much like a certain enterprising shapeshifter, the Stalker Queen understood the value of repeat business. Furthermore, that funny little box had provided her with a once-in-a-millennium opportunity to feast on the ancient energies of an overlord. From a stalker's perspective, magic aged like fine wine, and Nagnamor was a delectable vintage that Leosora couldn't wait to sink her mandibles into. All 300 million of them. The massive demons fought each other fiercely, both combatants unleashing devastating attacks upon their opponent. Nagnamor thrust his glaive forward, only to have the Stalker Queen stop it by freezing the very air around it. Though the attack failed, it produced a wave of heat that melted a nearby building and instantly boiled the 14 soldiers hiding inside. Leosora retaliated by slamming the foremost limbs of her arachnid lower end into the ground, causing a cascade of ice spikes to rise from it. The Archfiend easily evaded it by leaping into the air like a volcano on legs, but the poor souls seeking shelter in the sewers underneath were crushed by the glacial wave. As the Overlord's duel progressed, it became clear that neither could overpower the other. They were so closely matched that it seemed as though their battle would rage for an entire week. That obviously wasn't going to happen, since both of them only had minutes to spare before they were ejected from the mortal realm. However, there was already a clear loser in the clash between the hateful flames and the gluttonous ice. Namely, the unfortunate mortals caught in their wake despite their best efforts. Avoiding an overlord's fury was no simple task. Their tremendous bodies moved with such illogical speed and force that their mere passage caused the world around them to rip itself apart. Worst of all, they kept throwing each other around on top of each combatant, trying to maneuver themselves into a more advantageous position. As a result, roughly a quarter of the city had been flattened into a ravaged wasteland, even though it had only been a few minutes since Leosora was summoned. It wasn't an exaggeration to say that each of them was a sentient calamity in their own right. Both mortal armies had given up on fighting one another by that point. No meaningful military action could be taken until the overlords finally ran out of juice and returned whence they came. Only then would the survivors be able to decide which side claimed dominion over New Whitehall. Or what was left of it, at least. Until that moment came, every soldier's sole mission was to preserve their lives and that of their comrades, which was easier said than done. As if the massive demons weren't enough, their respective minions caused just as much havoc. The Flaming Legion, unleashed by Nagnamor, did its best to rampage through the Republic's ranks, while clouds of the Endless Swarm crawled over and devoured any Imperials they came across. The situation was so dire that there were multiple incidents of fighters from opposing sides joining forces to fight back the demonic hordes. From the perspective of the men and women caught up in this mess, this battle was no longer about the Empire or the Republic. It was a clear-cut case of life versus death. Amidst all the chaos surrounding them, and atop the flat roof of a particularly tall building, stood the monster responsible for bringing one half of this demonic duel to the physical realm.
"Oh! He broke out of that glacier so easily!" commented Boxy.
"Well, duh," said Cora indignantly. "What sort of overlord would let something like a bit of ice tie him down?"
"Yeah, okay, fair point. It's just that it was hard to tell when we first met, but Punchy is a lot stronger than I ever gave him credit for."
The Sandman and his fiend familiar were thoroughly enjoying Nagnamor and Leosora's epic brawl from a safe distance of about half a kilometer. Who would win in a fight between Punchy and Frosty had been a question in the back of Boxy's mind ever since it performed its second offering. It looked forward to getting an answer to that interesting inquiry. Cora, on the other hand, simply enjoyed the fight for what it was. A rare clash between tremendous powers well beyond her own.
"Whoa! Did he just throw her? What move was that?"
Boxy asked.
"That's called a suplex, boss. It's really fun to do and... Wait, is he going for a double suplex?"
"He is! Look at him go! Wait, he still hasn't let go of her abdomen."
"Could it be?"
Oh, baby, a triple! Frosty isn't beaten yet. Here comes that ice elemental she conjured earlier. Ouch! Right in the fiendicles. Damn that cheeky cunt.
Regardless of their reasons, both of them were quite excited to have front row seats to such a tremendous spectacle. That said, there was a risk that the fiend's enthusiastic yelling might attract some unwelcome attention. The monster in charge had ordered its familiars to refrain from any verbal chatter to avoid someone spoiling its fun. As such, all of their exchanges were carried out through telepathy. Some might think that having to focus on broadcasting thoughts would negatively impact their viewing experience, but the shapeshifter and its entourage were so used to it that it felt just as natural as talking.
Holy shit!
The fiend exclaimed.
Where did that lightning bolt come from? It completely broke off Uncle Naggy's horn!
That must be Imoril. Yeah, right there,
Foxy pointed.
See that little light blue speck just in front of that volcano?
Where?
Cora squinted.
No, not that one. The smaller one that's still erupting a little.
Oh, I think I see it, yeah. Why would she butt into their fight, though?
That's actually a very good question.
The vast majority of people in the war zone either went into hiding or were busy fighting off the Flaming Legion and the Endless Swarm. That was the smart thing to do, and Imoril was by no means stupid. Nor was she the righteous type who'd interfere in a vain attempt to limit casualties. Her involvement was most puzzling indeed, especially since she only seemed to be attacking Nagnamore. On a hunch, Boxy activated the Eagle Eye skill it acquired earlier that day, courtesy of Kira's ranger job reaching level 35. The monster's vision zoomed in on the Republic VIP, allowing it to barely confirm its suspicions.
Yep, looks like she's being mind-controlled. I see a whole lot of Frosty's brood all over her neck and head.
Oh, I see. Clever of the frigid Bint. Then what about that flashy yellow guy?
The what? Where?
Zooming out a bit, the monster caught sight of Lictor, who had suddenly reappeared and was streaking towards the two overlords. However, instead of striking at them, he used an exorcism spell to force the foreign influence from Imoril's mind. The High Elf Wizard seemed to pass out from the mental shock and fell towards the ground. The paladin swooped in and snatched her out of the air, then flew off into the distance, away from the calamitous clash.
No! Give me back my afternoon snack!
Leosolra's screeching voice was loud enough to shatter pretty much every pane of glass in the entire city.
Where are you looking at?
Nagnamore took advantage of her momentary distraction and drove his armored fist clean through the fake Stalker Queen's chest. He funneled his crimson flames into her exposed insides, incinerating a significant portion of her clones in an instant.
Ooh, that's gotta hurt,
Cora grimaced.
You go, Uncle Naggy! Show that manipulative bitch how we fiends do things!
Oh, no fear,
Drea whined through the telepathic link.
I want to watch Lady Leosolra's fight, too!
That psionic had mangled her limbs and catapulted her beyond the city's borders, leaving the Stalker momentarily stranded somewhere in the rainy woodlands. Naturally, she wanted to see the throwdown of the century for herself, but she was far too crippled to make it back to the city in time to catch either of the overlords. Furthermore, her master had just expended all of its MP on the offering ritual, so it wouldn't be able to resummon her to its position for quite a while.
Wait, that's it,
she realized.
There's no way this isn't airing on the Boxy show. Master, can you send me back? You'd have to resummon me to get me back on my feet anyway, right?
Hmm? Oh, good point, Claus. Off you go, then.
Thanks, Matt.
Your familiar has been dismissed.
Yeah! Get wrecked, you mini-legged cunt!
Cora continued to cheer as the battle raged on.
You know Nagnamore is technically the enemy, right?
Zira pointed out.
Huh?
The succubus was also on that rooftop, although her interest in the two overlords duking it out was quickly diminishing. She still looked on with a sort of bemused curiosity since it was an extremely rare event, but didn't feel as personally invested as a certain brain-dead fiend. That wasn't to say she had no stake in this, however.
Nagnamore clearly wants to kill the Master, and since we are but things that belong to the Master, he is our